Okay, so let's start. Cool, guys. So welcome to Metrics Foundation, Making Smart Meters Smarter with Beach Talk. So, and first of all, thanks for the, selecting that that presentation. I know there is like 9 of them, and yeah, I counted. And you guys came to that one, right? So I'm pretty sure that you're not going to regret it. So before we start, I'm going to talk a little bit about why, well, first of all, my name is Wagner, and I work for Tita. So why a Brazilian with a German surname is doing New Zealand work with integration and BizTalk, right? So pretty much everything started in 2005. I was moving jobs and then get to this new job, and the guy said, okay, you come in, fine. You have a new project, and the project is going to be a proof of concept with Microsoft. And that proof of concept is going to be for you working basically designing and implementing a solution on BizTalk. And I said, Biz what? So, well, and just to make things better, it was BizTalk 2006 beta 1, right? What was fantastic 6 months, because after that, it was like, you know what happens with beta software, right? You've been there, you try and try and try, and the thing said that doesn't work. And then you go back to the specialist, in this case, the guys from MCS, and after half an hour, they come back and say, yeah, it's a bug, so don't worry. And with that, you learn a lot. That means that 6 months later, I actually knew exactly what BizTalk was, and the project was quite successful. So successful that in the end, Microsoft decided to bought the IP and put it back to community, and that project at the time was the Health Connection Engine. And we also won the solution of the year from Microsoft Awards. So it was a pretty good job. 5 years later, and lots of the other integration jobs after that, Tita invited me to join the team as a Microsoft integration lead. And by the way, there's a big project, and as integration, you have to design and implement a big solution in BizTalk Server 2010. So apart from versions of BizTalk, my life didn't change much in the last 7 years, right? But funnily enough, the project was exactly the Metrics Foundation project. And then we're going to be talking a little bit about what that project was, and mostly what was the challenges that we have to get that project out of the way. Cool. So the agenda for today is going to be basically that. We're talking about a little bit about metrics and what is the project, the foundation project was. Then go through the solution overview, so explain to you guys how the solution hang together and what is the interesting bits about that. And the things that probably is going to be most interesting for you guys is like, what are the challenges that we get on those 2 years of developing that solution for them, and how we overcome that using BizTalk, either extending BizTalk or using the stuff that is in BizTalk there without having to go and create things outside of BizTalk. And finally, that share 3 of the lessons that we learned. So metrics is basically a leading provider in metering asset management services. It's quite a mouthful, right? But what that means, they basically manage your power meters, the power meters that you have at home, right? So they install, they connect, they disconnect, and most important of all, they read the information there. So then give that information to retailers, and then the retailers bring it back to you guys, the power bill at the end of the month, right? Metrics is currently investing a lot in smart meters technology. And what is the smart meters technology that is doing? It gets the information from the meters and send directly to a collector in a central location using 3G technology. Right, so that allow you guys allow the retailers to provide new products, like give you information on a half an hour basis, or give you more accurate meters for readings for you. And in order to get that organized, then metrics needed to get a whole set of foundation, what they call foundation services in place, right? And that was basically three objectives there. One was making sure that their metadata service was in place. So all the metadata around the meters and everything that is associated to that was in a central location, and all the systems could see the same version of the truth. That's one thing. The other one was to optimize the collection of those smart meter information, and that would be either daily reads or half an hourly reads. And finally, put a framework in place to provide services back to those retailers, right? So later on, if they need to create new products on top of that, those things could come quickly enough. And how Theta get involved into that? Theta is a leading provider for the integration, right? So it's it works at with BI, but also with software development, and there's a big focus on software development integration. And it's a longstanding partner of Metrics. And we've been working with them, supporting and helping them to expand that Beachtalk platform for some time. So when the Metrics Foundation project comes along, we are a part of the one of the respondents to the RFP and was selected to the process. Okay, so we're going to see next the solution. So in broad terms, what we have there, as we said, is three main concepts. So the metadata information that needs to be transferred somehow, right? The smart meters reads, and the client smart meter read request. So through the middleware, the metadata comes from various places like SAP or maybe some the government registry information, and goes down to a central repository. The central repository that they selected was SQL Server Master Data Services. Okay, but then after that, the same data needs to be collected again and sent through to the meter data management services. That is the location where they actually do the grunt of the work, right? So this is an Oracle application that has all the information required to collect meter data and send that data back. On the other hand, you have the smart meters sending data to the collectors, right? And we're talking that about three different vendors with three different standards, and all of that has to be centralized, rationalized, and sent again to master data management services. Sorry, the meter data management services. I'll stop talking about that and call that what everyone calls at Metrics, that is MDMS. And finally, you have like clients. In this case, clients are actually the retailers, right? So people like Mercury, Genesis, Contact, and things like that. They request data from Metrics, and this data comes from the MDMS. And all of that needs to be sent back to the retailer so they can generate the billing information and get it out to the end consumers, that is us, right? That last step is the place where they're talking about creating a new framework. So they wanted to put together a framework of that could support initially this product, but later on a whole lot of other products that they would either create or have in line but wouldn't be ready for implementing right now. So this framework was called the Common Services Delivery Framework. So the Common Services Delivery Framework, what it does is get information requests from clients, and it can be either on the format that the client request. So I already have a system in place. I can change the way that I generate requests. You have to deal with that. You happy? Not much, but yes, I can do it, right? But if you are a new system and you or a new vendor and you're starting to put together your system, we could also suggest a standard interface, right? So an interface that people understand, and then that the metrics understands, and that would be much faster to be processed. So once that information is inside the Common Services Delivery Framework, what it would do is process and that request and do things like common validation, validate against the product, the specific product that they're using, and after that, you store until it's ready to be the processed. Because one thing that was interesting about those requests, they usually send a day in advance, right? So here is my request for you to run tomorrow at midnight. So we have to receive that and also make sure that we could store. In other cases, inside the metrics is because the collectors were sending information, right, to the system, usually around midnight, then I would say, I don't want to run my although you said you send my request and you're ready to run at midnight, I don't want it to run it exactly at midnight. I want to run it like 2 hours later so I can make sure that I have all the latest data from the smart meters ready for you to pick up. So when the requests are ready, then they are sent to a product-specific application. A product-specific application in this case can be like the read requests application. So I get a read, I'm going to be processing it, and then giving you the result. But it could be something different. It could be like, here is a list of all the disconnections that needs to be done today because those are the meters has not been paid their bills. So, or it can be the other way around. It can be all the connections that needs to be made because the bills has been paid in full, right? So that kind of framework allow you to have a central repository where you do all those validations and stuff like that, and after that distribute the information for each one of the applications. And the applications finally talk to the line of business applications that actually do the job. In this case, the MDMS, for example, or in some other cases could be the collectors that send information to each one of the meters to either connect or disconnect meters. Right? So quickly, why BStalk? So what is why did the BStalk fit? First thing was that it fits well with the metrics technology footprint, right? Metrics is basically a Microsoft partner. It already had a version of a flavor of BStalk there at that point. It has BStalk 2009 running at the time and with some integration. And BStalk, at that point, BStalk was kind of the bad guy because of something that usually happens. It's like the system is not working, it's BStalk fault. And they didn't have anyone there to actually show that the problem was not BStalk, was actually one of the end systems that was not working or things like that, right? So the part of our work was making sure that we're putting everything together to also take this bad rep out of BStalk, which we did it quite well. It's quite a mature technology. If you think about it, it started with BStalk 2000, and now we're on BStalk 2010. We had seven versions of on that, so basically seven major releases. And Microsoft is releasing cumulative updates on I think a quarterly or half every half a year. Right. It also showed commitment with the technology and showed that it's going ahead with BStalk vNext and is aligning that with the rest of the Microsoft roadmap with the ability to connect BStalk to the cloud and things like that. And most importantly for the project itself was the ability to scale out of the box, right? Because they needed to have something that started small but the idea it grows from 150,000 meters that they have installed initially to 350,000 in quite a quick pace. So it needed to get that and make sure that it's scaled together. And also, something that is easy to extend the functionality. Because when you're starting to look at the requirements or some of the stuff that might not fit with Beanstalk initially, but then when you look at it, actually it works quite well with Beanstalk if you make sure that you extend it like that. And then finally, before we can actually start with the challenges, was some of the design tenets. So the first one was making sure that the whole solution was publisher subscriber. At that point, let's stop a little bit and do a quick show of hands. Who's here is working with Beanstalk today? Good. How many of you guys are the architects? Good. How many of you guys are developers? Pretty much the same. So the architect and developer and things like that. So it seems like pretty much everyone has some idea of the integration and the Beanstalk capabilities. So when you're talking about publisher subscriber, in this case, the ability to make sure that you route messages through using subscription information instead of linking that at the hard code points inside the system. So also, as much as possible, we try to use the content-based routing pattern. So instead of having orchestrations in the middle that didn't do anything apart from transform a message or and pass it to the end system, try to work with just those subscriptions, receiving a message, transforming, and sending it to the other side. Right? That would be quite important when you talk about the size of some of those messages. And finally, perform to the SLAs, right? They have some quite aggressive SLAs when you consider the size of the messages. So we're talking about, when I say size of the message, what do you think that would be like a big message for that? Any guess?
2 megabytes.
2 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
30K. Let's go a little bit up. Hmm? A little bit up? Well, the average message, what about 100 megabytes, right? But when we're talking about the message that we're receiving from the collectors, we're talking about gigs, 1 gig, sometimes 1.5. So that's why we have to do like a lot of jumping and customization and stuff like that. The challenges. So I'm going to talk about 4 of the challenges that we had, right? And some of them was quite a sword fight like that. So the first one, that one was start kind of easy, was the auditing requirements. So one of the things that they had to do because of the compliance was every message that gets inside the system has to be recorded. Every message that gets outside of the system has to be recorded, right? So for you guys that work with Beanstalk, you know that usually to do that out of the box, you have to create 1, 2, 3, 4, at least between 3 and 4 ports, depending on how clever you are, right? And that all of that with subscriptions and having to change stuff inside. So we are already talking about when the system was up, something like 20 points of interaction. I wouldn't go and work with 60 ports just because we need to have 20 ports in and out. So that was one of the challenges. The other point on that one is all of that has to be configurable at runtime. We couldn't redeploy or do anything like that. The other one was the splitting of the message. They had a quite interesting requirement with MDMS that it work it much better if you have like heaps of smaller messages, but we are receiving like a one gig message at the, out of them, right? So we have to make sure that those messages was break down in batches again that was customizable in size, but it has to read to store the header and the footer information. That usually is not what happens when you're using Beachtalk. When you're having when you're working with Beachtalk, usually what happens is that you when you're doing the batching, it's going to strip your header because basically that's your envelope, and then break down in message of one message of each type. The other one is routing. So if you think about that common service delivery framework picture, we see that there is a lot of other things going on, right? And because you wanted to make sure that was like a pure publish subscriber, we needed to make sure that all those items were routed properly. The complexity at that point was that some of the information was not actually in the message, right? So on a typical scenario, you go and you get information out of the message to create your routing subscription, and then we go with that. But we didn't have that luxury there. And finally, performance itself. So running one to 1.5 gig files and transform that in 2 hours, including the time to process on the line of business system. So all of that was kind of the issues that you have to overcome. So let's start with the auditing. So the scenario is basically, I receive a message, I have to dump it somewhere, right? I send a message, I have to dump it somewhere. The somewhere has to be customizable. It has to happen just before anything else happens with the message, and just after everything else happens with the message on the way out. The names has to be based on information that sometimes was inside the message. So there was a lot of things that we needed to do. And also the auditing failures. So if I couldn't save the file, I shouldn't stop the processing because of that, right? That was one of the requirements. How we put that together? We create a component. So how many people here that was working with Beachtalk has to extend Beachtalk using pipeline components? Good, some of you guys. And this was one of those cases, right? You're going to see a lot of those cases here. So what we did with this component was create a pipeline component that was ready to run anywhere. It could run on the receive locations. It could run on the send locations, right? So on the send port. It could be customizable in terms of the file path is one property, the name of the file is one property, and it's all based on macros, right? So you could get like either properties from the message itself and create your file name based on that, or you could get other informations like the original file name, the time, and things like that, and just create your macro, and that's how the file is going to be created. So that's how we overcome that that initial solution, that initial problem. The splitting is another one that is kind of interesting. So I receive one message, and it becomes multiple messages, and that has to be processed and send it out to the end system. Right? And then guess what? We had another pipeline component there. So it starts to show like you can use Beachtalk, can still use all the framework that Beachtalk puts together and extend it in a way that is do stuff that you don't do it out of the box. Right? The option for that to do the splitting would be like typically what we would do is get the message, put inside an orchestration, loop it through, break it down in your pieces, and then start sending out the messages. Try to do that with a 1 gig file. Just load it inside the message box. Takes about 15 minutes. And then you have 1 gig message in the memory that if you have to pass through a transformation would become 2 gig. And then because you have to loop through, well, I'll stop there, right? So that's why we have to create a splitter component. Once that happens, then you have multiple messages, and then all those messages are processed in isolation, and each one by itself. But we have a little side effect on that. My original idea, and our original idea that, as a team was, get the message, do the transformations, blah, 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 split it on the way out, right? Splitting can only happen on the receiving locations. I don't know if you guys knew that, but it's something that I actually find out when I starting to do the R&D for that. So my code was all fine, and that I had no place to put on my send pipeline. I could only put that on the receive pipelines because the only receive pipelines create a collection of messages. Send pipelines has always a single message. So I thought, fine, okay. So then we split the message and do the transformations, right? The original message was not feasible for splitting because it get like a whole lot of the message was coming in a way that was too flat, and all the groupings that is required by MDMS needed to be put together after the transformation. And as I said before, the message was too big for the message box round trip, because then one thing I could do was receive the message, then do this, even if the splitting on the receive was fine, do some transformations first, and then on the way out of that, then do the splitting. But again, I would be trying to run without 1 gig file, excuse me, inside the pipe. So in the end, what we had to do was include another pipeline component. And by that time, I was like, me and my team was expert in pipeline components. We knew exactly how to create those things, right? That one was quite interesting and quite reusable in the end. What we did was making sure that we could create a component that put inside a pipeline either on the receive or on the send that actually run a Beanstalk transformation, right? So you get a map. So you do all your mapping requirement exercise inside Beanstalk. You reuse all the things that you have there, and then you just plug the map inside a pipeline. The other advantage of that is in some cases we have to like run the same message through 2 or 3 maps. That is not possible to do if you're trying to do context-based routing, right? If you're doing that, I would have to go and plug in orchestration, but with the pipeline component, then what happened was I could put like one transform, then another transform, then another transform, and then just let they link together. After my message was properly transformed and was ripe for the split, then my splitter code would go through, break it down in multiple messages, and then it would go. So finally, next one was routing. And not going to explain the message or the picture. It's just to show you guys how many points, each one of those points in the picture is a point where we needed to do some kind of routing somehow, right? Receive a message from the client. Then I have a message here that I have to send it there. And all of those systems has to be connected using routing. So it's quite complex routing that we had in place. because we're using the publisher subscriber pattern, all of that will has to be based on properties that has to be discoverable inside the message, right, in the context of the message. And some of those, just to finish on the publisher subscriber pattern, is that some of those context information was not in the message itself, right? So I couldn't extract of that. And there was quite a comprehensive state transition that we have to go through. So just to add to my collection of pipelines, we created one called the context writer. So if that, what we did now was, as long as I have a set of context properties somewhere, I can associate that context to the message, right? And say, now my context status on when it passed through this point of the pipeline is new, then add another context writer and say, and by the way, the message type is blah, and the product is Y, right? So I could add contexts to the message while it's going through the pipe. And now that I have my properties defined, then I could like do all my routing and make sure that I did the stuff that I required and send my message out. The performance challenge. The first thing that we had was, as you guys said, the message footprint, right? So the message was too big, and then because of that, we have to make sure that we could work with that message in a way. The second one was some of those things have quite complex transformations. So we add insult to injury, right? Because we already have a message that is really big, and then you have to run through a whole lot of the processing through the transformation. And then, because things was already fun enough, then we only have a very restricted time to do that. And that that time it was not negotiable because, as I said before, was something like I received the information from the collectors from midnight. By 2 a.m., I have to be running the read requests. By 4 a.m., I have to be sending that back to the users. So those blocks are quite well defined, right? So we're going to be treating each one of them in a way. So the message footprint solution, what actually happened is I wouldn't having all those pipeline components there and do nothing with that, right? So basically, the same way that we would be orchestrating inside an orchestration, we end up creating processes or orchestrations using the pipeline, right? Putting a set of pipeline components in place in the right order that do exactly what I process. And then the advantage of that is that I'm running that using streaming. So what's happening now, while I'm reading the message, I'm actually processing it instead of having to put everything in memory and put it down, right? And that speed up the process a lot. So that was like a sample just based on the items that we saw. Right, our pipeline components most of the time would have like one archiver, but then two or three transforms, just for good measure, because then if you put the information there, you could reuse the pipelines later on. Then a splitter, and 3, 4, 5 context writers, for example. Okay. And then the way that to guarantee that I only use what I wanted was each one of those components had a flag saying, yeah, enable that one or not. So you could create like a template that you use most of the time and then just choose and pick. Yes, I want to enable this component on this particular instance. I want to enable this component and this component. And then only those ones that is enabled and set up would be running. But again, life was too easy by now, right? So we have side effects. It was really good to have the information inside the pipeline and then it run it through the pipeline. But how the business know what's happening? We're still talking about kind of a 2-hour period, right? And how do I know that by the end of the period, the message actually didn't go anywhere or didn't process properly, or where is it? Should I halt and then cry wolf, or can I wait another 10 minutes and actually have the file, right? So what we did with that was take advantage of the something from BizTalk called the business activity monitoring. Who used BAM here before? Oh, it's quite a lot of people, right? How many people that had the experience of thinking that BAM is quite a useful tool, but it's not well understood? So one thing that we find out was that the BAM can allow you to do like a intercept, do the BAM interceptor. So write inside something, write information on BAM, and update messages there, right? So who would guess what would be the next step? Based on my previous life so far? Another pipeline company. I don't have a chocolate here, otherwise you would have one. So that was our original pipeline orchestration, let's say, and all of a sudden we included a set of items, right? So with that now, what happens is when the message hit the BAM on that particular place, it would start an activity entry, right? When it gets to that point, it would update the activity with a different status. When it gets to that point, it would complete the activity, for example, right? So then I would know, yes, my messages actually started being processed because I received the message. Then my message is actually at the splitting point, or my message is actually being sent to the client or completed, right? So with that, it got, the system got really good visibility. And that's basically the tool that is used every day now at Matrix to know what's happening. And it's kind of one of the banes of my life, because like 2 a.m. in the morning, the guy's calling and say, hey, I don't see anything at on BAM yet, so you have a problem with the system. Good thing that happens like once in a blue moon, but that happened on Tuesday, 2 a.m. until 6. Beautiful. Complex transformations. I would hope that I would have here a silver bullet for you guys and said, yes, we fixed that with blah, but no, it was like hard work, right? There is no way to get out of complex transformations apart going to pure XSLT after some point, right? You can do so much with the maps, but it's always going to get to a point where you have to put everything in the map, generate the good old XSLT, and then tweak it from there. But the things that we learn with that, doing those poor XSLTs on huge maps was, one, is a really good idea to use variables to catch information through the loops, right? What we find is like some of the time what would happen is you write in your XSLT and then you're just saying, get this information 2 nodes up. Then when you run that transformation, it runs like a dog. It doesn't work at all. Then you just go and say, actually, when you enter in the loop, get that information while you're still at the node. Then later on inside the process, write the variable. When you get to the next iteration of the node, then you get the new information. And that makes it goes much quicker. Another thing that happened there, and there was a whole lot of grouping that we need to do. How many people here has to deal with grouping issues? Good, not many. You guys are blessed. So that's one of the reasons that I was saying that the message was actually not fit to be to be split at the beginning, right? MDMS as a system required information to be in a hierarchy that was not ready, it was not exactly, not in the original message, right? So if you Google something later on, go for or Bing something or search something, you choose, go through the Mencken technique. That's a technique that you use using a set of XSLT commands that allow you to actually create groups and then interact really quickly through that. And it's really, really good. Speed up the process a lot as well. The other good thing about using the maps, then flipping it over to XSLT, is the .NET integration, right? So you can actually write your scriptlets as C# or VB or whatever that you like, and then actually have pieces that are really, really hard to do using XSLT in .NET, and just pass a node to that, let it process and bring back the information to put inside your XSLT, right? And finally, when life is way, way too hard, then you had to split the maps. So in some cases, we get to the point of saying, this map just doesn't work like that. Break it down in two. Let's do like this part first, then get the result of that, and then work on the next one. Doing that, we speed up the process a lot. Aggressive SLAs and the solutions for that. Again, there was not like a free meal. First thing was we already leveraged gains from a whole lot of other things we did, right? So for the case where we're going through the messages, adding a whole lot of processing on the pipelines, making sure that you take time off of your transformations already help with reducing the time. Then it was like a whole round of test and tune, test and tune, test and tune, right? And the problem with that is we run in with we have to run with those 1.5 gig files or at least something similar to that to actually have a feel of how the system works, right? We came to places where we only starting to hit problems when you get a file that was like 800 meg. With the 500 meg was fine, if the 600 meg was fine, we put an 800 meg there, 2 hours to run a process that was running in half an hour before. Right, and then in this case, we test and tune the pipelines, for example, making sure that we put instrumentation information there and test the components in isolation, so we know exactly which components was giving some trouble. We tested the orchestrations and making sure that the orchestration is not doing anything too silly, and try to clean up and make sure that the orchestration was as slim as possible. But the places where we have the most gains was database calls, right? And on that, you have a whole new world around how when you're working with too many calls to the database, how the transactions affect your system, how the MS, the DTC is going to affect your system and things like that. So quite good articles from Tiago around tuning WCF and some other information. So if I get three lessons that we learn out of that to kind of wrap it up. First one was confirm your assumptions as soon as possible. So if you think about it, Like the pipeline, the splitter pipeline was a typical one. Yeah, I do this stuff and just dump it on the sand, right? Yeah, right. So make sure that you that your technical assumptions are correct. Test it. Make sure that you have time to actually do really quick and dirty R&D to see if the thing works. And at the same time, and not less important, your business requirement assumptions are correct, because we also have places that we are about to go ahead and do something, and then say, okay, just let me check with the business, and the thing would be like a totally different case if we go on the path that we are going. The second one is invest in your component libraries, right? So especially when you have to work with like high performance, and and if you want to use the content-based routing, investing on a good set of pipeline components is quite a good idea, right? The trick with that one that we found was, when you get each one of those problems, what we actually tried to do was like, fence the problem, make sure that we know exactly what the problem was, but after that, try to solve that problem as generic as possible. Because then there was too many cases where we actually used the splitter or the context writer or some of those other components in a place that originally we wouldn't think about using that, but because you created it generic enough, it actually fit the bill, right? And finally, invest in testing. On that project, if we didn't have investing in testing as much as we did, then we would have a whole lot of trouble. When I'm talking about testing, I'm talking about functional testing, like making sure that you are testing small iterations. So get something new, send it to the test, then continue developing, making sure that your life cycle is working quite well, it's well-oiled. Right. One thing that was quite interesting on this project was that in the end, our internal bugs was much bigger for our piece of the project than the external bugs. That means that our tester was doing quite a good job finding stuff for us. So send it to our tester, he come back with bugs, we fix it, and then we deploy it to the business to test. They couldn't find stuff because our guys were finding it first. But also, make sure that you invest in performance testing. And performance testing is quite a beast, right? There's a whole lot of things to think about here, like data. How are we going to actually get the data to test? It took us, I think, 3 months to actually make sure that the business could provide us test data in about 1 gig, right? Because that was their future state. They were not there yet. And then what they have to do is trying to do some magic and collate like 3-4 days of data in one. Right, and also that our own time doing performance and working with performance, so we kind of underestimate that in a way. We thought about 2-3 weeks of performance test, and end up having much more than that just because of the elapsed time that you have running those tests. Every time it was like fix one thing, half a day later, yeah, it didn't work. So those are the three lessons that we learned throughout that project. And I open the forum for questions. Yep?
With your iPhone, what was the issue with using the
training system? Because we needed it to be stored in a specific location. Right, and that has to be configurable because they need to actually store that for 7 years. So it was not just a matter of tracking that and having that on the database and bringing it on demand. They have to have that available, the physical file available.
So
No. Mm-hmm. More questions?
Previous slide referred to ESP tool, they're using like itineraries for something else.
Mm-hmm. No, not on that one. On that one, we did, the reason we didn't use ESP, we're using ESP there for the exception management mostly. And the reason we didn't use that to do like the content routing was because at the time that we started the project, that was pretty much 2 years ago, ESP 2.1 was just being launched and coming from a totally open source to be to be working from Microsoft. So the team didn't have the skills yet, and we thought that the technology was still not ready from a productivity point of view, right? So if we were doing the project today, we probably would be approaching some of those things that we did with the pipelines, with with the DSB and the itineraries. Because what we did there was pretty much creating an itinerary with pipeline components without the luxury of testing and stuff like that with branching. Any other questions?
Yep.
No, it was related to the amount of data that you have to process, really. So it was everything was running on a 64-bit platform, but for example, it was just the thresholds, and some of those cases was around either the transformations or the database calls when you have to put data into the databases, right? So with 500 megabyte files, for example, we get on the threshold of the DTC not timing out, so it was fine, it actually go there, and then when you move from 500 to a 600 megabyte file, for example, then it goes over the DTC time, something that took like a good week, 2 weeks to find out. And I probably lost half of my hair on that week. More questions? How are we going with time? So, 3 minutes left? Good. I thought that was that was not going to talk that much, but that's really good. So, any other questions? No? So, have to go through related contents. And the other BizTalk presentation that we had before was the Azure talk from Nikolai yesterday. So make sure that you guys, if you didn't went to that one, take a look at the web. And make sure that you evaluate, and hopefully you guys like it.